This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Shattered Lives, Reach Ireland's crime podcast for the Irish Daily Star and the Irish Mirror. I'm crime and defence editor Michael O'Toole. Today we're going to hear a really disturbing and worrying and frightening story about a lady who has lost the two most precious things in her life. Her two children were stolen from her, taken from her, and this is her story, their story, and her efforts and her fight to get her children back. Mandy Kelly, hello.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. As I say, this is a really, really important story, and we're going to spend some time hearing the background and how, if there's any solution to this. First of all, you have two young boys.
Yes, I have two young boys. Zane is five. He will turn six in May. Kareem is three, and he will turn four in November. When the abduction occurred, Zane was only 3 years old, and Kareem was only 16 months old.
Okay, so when was the last time you held your children?
The last time I held my children was on the 11th of March 2022. So it seems a long, long time ago.
That is a very, very long time. And any parent listening to this or watching this will really be horrified. How do you cope?
I think the one word that keeps me going, and that's hope. If I don't have hope, then I have nothing. Like, as in, my children, my two sons, they really need their mother. And I can't rob them of the fight that I have to ensure that they're back in my arms very soon and that they're back in Ireland.
Okay, so we'll go backwards to go forwards. The children were abducted by the children's father, a man called Rami Gamal Mahmoud Mohammed. And you were in a relationship with him.
Yes, I was married to him. I'm legally still married to him.
Okay, would you mind telling us how you met this man? What were the circumstances and how the relationship developed?
I lived in the United Arab Emirates for 8 years. And I met my estranged husband in 2013 on a night out with friends. And we started a relationship. We were with each other for almost 4 years before we returned to Ireland to get married. As you can imagine, Michael, I have an awful lot of time sometimes to reflect back on like as in things that I might have ignored. And I think it's only people that have gone through abuse, domestic abuse, both men and women, that will be able to really sympathise with me and kind of get their head wrapped around the fact that there are these people in the world that know how to manipulate and know how to gaslight, manipulate, control, both financially, emotionally, spiritually, etc. And that's exactly what happened to me. I fell under his spell, unfortunately.
When did you get married? So you were together 8 years before the children were abducted. When did you get married?
I got married to my estranged husband in July of 2017, just shortly after we returned to Ireland to set up home here.
And how would you have described the relationship before the marriage and after? Did it change?
I have to say it really did change. And a lot of people both, as I said, both men and women who experience domestic abuse from their partners will always say that once their partner, the controlling partner, gains control, and that control can be marriage, it can be when the partner has children, as I said, people that go through this abuse, this is what this control is like. They basically try to take your personality away from you.
And when you were suffering that, was it fair to say it's coercive, a form of coercive control?
It
Do you
is
think you were?
coercive control, and the thing about it is, your family can see it, but they don't want to say too much because obviously they don't want to hurt you, and you're just in that cycle of abuse that you actually don't know. Because they gaslight you so much, you're constantly questioning yourself, as though to say, am I wrong? Am I wrong? Or am I just imagining this? And obviously, I had two small boys to look after, I had a job to go to, I was still very much into self-development. I knew how important that was.
Mandy, this is your story. So, was he ever violent or abusive towards you?
He would have been very passive aggressive, as in being very controlling in my personal space, always watching what I was doing, almost to the point, and I actually listened to this on a podcast recently, that I was nearly almost afraid to socialize with my friends in case he was breathing behind me, in case I did something wrong, in case I said the wrong thing. He would have been very judgmental on my parenting skills as well. And obviously now I reflect back on that and know that I was an incredibly good mother. I did everything for my children. For example, and when my first son was born, I went back to work 16 weeks after he was born. Actually, 6 weeks after he was born, I took on some contract work to bring more money into the house. I bought the family home 12 months before this all happened. So I genuinely thank God I can go to bed every night and knowing that I made sure my children were always incredibly well looked after.
Did you ever consider ending the relationship?
Yes, there were tough times. There really were tough times, but just because I was, as I said, there was so much that had happened while we were here. He was unemployed for months, and we had two small kids, and obviously we moved home. Things were fine. Like I said, I was on maternity leave. Life was busy. I went back to work in July 2021. He then decided that it would be best for us because COVID restrictions were starting to lift that we apply for our son's passports. So that's what we did. And we had huge hassle with that because of the fact that there was such a backlog. So we were supposed to leave in December 2021, obviously just for a fortnight. But we had to reschedule the vacation until March 2022. So beforehand, everything was fine. My sons were being looked after by my mother here in the family home because we had issues like every couple with childcare. We went to the school that Zane was supposed to start in September of that year. So there was absolutely no red flags. And thankfully, even after speaking with an international barrister who specializes in these types of cases, her name is Caroline Langley, just for anyone that ever needs a contact. And She asked me that question as well. She says, "Mandy, did you see any red flags before your trip?" I said, "Absolutely none." And she was saying the very same thing, that she asks her clients that question all the time, and all of them have never observed any red flags. Obviously, if I observed any red flags, it would have been, there would be no chance. And people that know me, there would have been absolutely no chance of me hopping on that plane to Cairo with my children.
So you're in Cairo. What, how long were you there before the abduction happened?
So we were supposed to return to Ireland on the 12th of March. So the day before we were supposed to leave, this is when the whole rumpins began. So I had woke up early on the 11th of March because I wanted to, I was finishing, getting everything organized, for us to go back. And he took me aside. He wanted me to go for coffee with him. But the more I think about it now, the more I know that he wanted me to be on, me to be in a public place, give me this awful news, and for me to react and possibly react in a very like overtly way. And possibly I may have gotten myself into trouble with my reaction. That's what he had thought. I said to him that because our young son was a little bit unsettled, and because he was so clingy with me, that I wasn't going to agree to that, and that whatever he had to say to me there and then. And he said that he didn't want to go back to Ireland. And I can't explain to you, Michael. The only way I can explain it to you is that my whole body started to actually shake. I could actually feel my stomach actually being in my mouth. That's the only way that I can explain it. But I knew, I just something in me knew that I had to remain calm. I just knew this was something that I had to be very calm about, that I didn't have to overreact. Obviously, by my reactions, he knew that I was absolutely shocked and horrified by his reaction. So
Tell
we were.
me, did he say, I'm staying here. I want you to stay. I want the kids to stay. Or what did he say?
He just said, "I'm staying here. And the boys are staying here as well."
And what about you? What did
He's,
he say about you?
he said, "It's up to you." Okay. But that quickly changed. So, as you can imagine, what happened afterwards? Thankfully, it's funny the way that your brain can lock out things when it wants to. And the thing that I remember is I knew that we had to get COVID tests before we were to return to Ireland. Obviously, I didn't know at the time. The laws had changed whilst we were away, that we didn't require this. This could have changed a lot of things. And I remember going to the living room in the apartment that we were staying in, even. Like, it shows how this was all orchestrated beforehand. I had wanted to stay in a hotel, obviously, like a holiday. We had a hard enough time with COVID. We all wanted to go to travel and get sun and to enjoy ourselves. But he made sure that we were to have a holiday apartment, and I know now. Because obviously, if I had been in an apartment, I would have been able to get help. What happened, as I said, is a day's. I thought the best thing for us to do, me and him to do, is to go for a walk to try and get our COVID tests. And his mum and his brother and wife were in the apartment. And I knew my kids would have been okay there. I knew that. And I knew I was only going to be away maximum 20 minutes. The the center was close by, and I knew that if I got him to walk and, try to let him to try to make him to convince him that going home was the best thing for us. And I tried everything, Michael. I really, really tried. I told him that if we were to come back, that we could consider a move there, or we could visit there more often. Obviously, I was just throwing every card that I had to ensure that my kids and I, and to be honest, because I was so disgusted at what he had done, I didn't even care at that stage if he was going to go with us or not. I was totally disgusted, though I'd hit it quite well. So while we
Sorry, did you feel frightened?
incredibly, incredibly, I was in this massive area in Cairo. No help. Even I had my phone, my mobile phone, but I didn't have an Egyptian SIM, so I couldn't even contact anyone. Obviously, I remember I could make a call. I made a call to the Irish consulate in Cairo, but because it was so close to St. Patrick's Day, there was no one there to take my call. And I had called the Department of Foreign Affairs that evening, and it was just a security guy that I was speaking to. I'm not sure what his role was, but he said to me that because it was a civil action, he couldn't help, which I hope will change in the very near future. That lesson can be learned.
You ended up being locked in the apartment.
So what happened was, him and I, whilst we were in the building that we were supposed to get our COVID test from, he refused to get his COVID test. And this infuriated me. This really infuriated me. So him and I, we had an argument, and I knew, right, that this was it. So we separated, like as in we went our own way, and I went back to the apartment. But because in these huge areas, a lot of the buildings can look the same, I kind of got distracted. But thank God, really thank God, I was able to make my way back. So I was with nothing outside an apartment door, and it's scorching hot. So I kept ringing him, and he was telling me that he was going to a different city in Egypt, and to stop ringing him. He eventually came back, and what he may have done would may have put my sons in a situation that they would have been in harm.
Okay. So how did you end up locked in the apartment?
So he came back, and he started raging again, completely raging out of control, like complete and utter nutter monster is the only way I can explain it. Monster. I'm so glad. I really am so glad that I was able to keep so calm. And I did. And I think by keeping calm and remaining calm under them situa that under them circumstances, I think it infuriated him even more. And obviously, like any Irish person, what do we resort to when we're in panicking? There was a lot of prayers said. And I do know, I genuinely do know that, like us in how I got out of there safe is a complete and utter miracle, a real miracle. So what happened was, he locked me in the apartment. He left that night, and I kept ringing his mother. Even she was an absolute nightmare. I'm gonna be mindful of my language, but she was a nightmare to deal with. Like I said, any mother would have encouraged her son to have gone back there with our two kids. She needed to be mindful of the fact that my children were there for the first time ever. They didn't know the language. It was completely terrifying to them. They're two young little boys who obviously were very close to their mother. And for her to support him, is absolutely atrocious. You can probably hear the anger in my voice when I say this.
How did you get out of the apartment?
So what happened was on the 16th of March. Sorry, the 15th of March, because it was the 16th of March that I went to the airport. On the evening of the 15th of March, he came to the apartment again. And technically I was being treated like a hostage. You know, I had to meet his demands. I had to go back to Ireland, sell the family home. And at the time as well, my mother had sold the family her own family home, and she was downsizing. So he knew that there was a substantial amount of cash there. And what he had wanted me to do was to go back to Ireland, sell the family home. And obviously, he knew how much my mother absolutely adored the two boys. And obviously, my mother and I are close, like any mother and daughter relationship, that we're always close to our mummies. So he knew that anything and everything would have been done to ensure that his demands were met. So that evening, I had tried to kind of coerce him into, you know, telling him that I was going to meet his demands, but I tried to convince him that the only way that I could sell the family home in Ireland was by him coming back. And obviously, there's a Family Law Act here which requires the partner to sign documents, even regardless of the fact that his name wasn't on the property. He would have still needed to sign documents. And he kept convincing me that he could have done this in through the Irish Embassy in Cairo. And I was right, because when I came back, I learned that that couldn't have been done. He would have had to come back here. So he was very foolish. So he was. He didn't really figure the whole plan out very well. So he left the apartment door open that night, and I knew. I was watching, and I obviously there's details that I'm not comfortable sharing here, but I'm just going to put it like this. I knew that I wasn't safe. I guess, and he had told me that he was going to have me arrested. He even suggested that he was going to drug me and that I was going to sign documents in Arabic. He told me that there was court cases involving myself. Like I was saying, all I could think of at the time was, I really don't know what he is going to do. I really don't know what's going to be the end of it here. He kept saying to me as well that his mother had made him promise on his dad's grave that he wasn't going to physically hurt me. So you can imagine how afraid I was. I knew that every move I made I had to be very, very careful.
You knew you had to get out of Egypt, really, did you?
I knew. I just knew. So when Stephen, I thought I had him, you know, calmed down a little, that I had achieved something and that I had him calmed, I got him to calm down. But this wasn't the case, because the following morning I had contact on him and he started manipulating me again, because all I wanted to do was to see if the boys were okay. He refused to let me see the boys. He completely out. And I'm sure, Michael, that I would never have been able to see the boys until the demands were met. And this is something that I'm incredibly upset that the authorities here have totally ignored. Like, as in, that my kids were kidnapped. I was held as a hostage. This is not a civil case. This is a criminal case. But hopefully, we'll have the opportunity to speak more about this later. So I just knew that morning, like I said, the following morning, when he started manipulating me again and refusing to take my calls and playing games, that that was it. I can't even explain to you. I can't even think about it myself, because it's just something that I hope no one No parent, a decision no parent has to make, but I knew how to get out. And
And you knew that you had to leave
I
your
had to
kids.
leave. Yes, I had to leave. And I thought that if I traveled to the airport, and obviously I wasn't even, Michael, I wasn't even fit to even book my own flight. I was that upset and that traumatized. I can remember ringing my brother and his wife when I got to the airport. I hadn't even my flight booked before I even reached the airport. Like, nobody does that. That shows how upset I was. And they were convinced that, like, my two kids were with me. I had to tell them that, listen, my two kids aren't with me. So I got them to book my flight. I was there around 3 p.m. My flight wasn't until 2 a.m. the next morning, so I had a lot of time. I had no Wi-Fi in Cairo Airport. I had to keep asking people to allow me to share their Wi-Fi with me. I had no Egyptian SIM, so I was in a very, very awkward very weak position. So I knew that if he knows that I'm at the airport and there's a lot of time here, that he might, see sense, and that he'll know that this is it. So that evening he had called me, and he asked me where I was. I told him that I was at the airport and that I was waiting for him and the two boys. And he had ample time, Michael, to go back to the apartment. He didn't even have to pack, like, as in the packing was done. He didn't have to do an awful lot. He knew the flights were going to be paid for, like, as in that wasn't going to be an issue. But he played the game. Michael, he s said to me that he thought it was the best thing for me not to be able to see the boys before I go. But I genuinely think, and even my family and friends, they have said this to me as well. He never thought I was going to have the guts to leave, but I knew I had to. I knew I had to.
Talk to us about your emotions when you were on the plane leaving the boys.
See, sitting, it was so weird because usually, on a flight, you never really have you never really have much space. And on that flight back, there were two empty seats beside me, so you can imagine how I felt. And when I came back to Dundalk that day on the 17th of March, I was met with my mother here, and first thing my mother did was say, "Listen, I know that the two boys aren't with you, but you're safe. You're safe. And once you're safe, I know that you'll get your two boys back." And she's right, like, as in, and that's why I made that horrific, horrible decision and having to leave, because I knew that I would have been always able to fight for my kids, but I had to be safe.
He wants 500,000 euro, is it?
Yes, he wants
Talk to me about that.
500,000 euro. So, obviously, as I said, the demands were made whilst I was there, and to answer your question, who was of help? The first people that were of help was an organisation. They're based in England. It's called Reunite International. The lady who started this organisation went through something similar as myself, and she set up this charity in the early 90s, and she actually gets funding now from the British government. She's an amazing lady, amazing lady, and I hope, please God, someday I'll get to meet with her. So they were the first people that were able to advise me what I needed to do, because when I had contacted the Department of Justice here, all they kept saying to me was, "Go to my embassy here in or to go to the embassy here, the Department of Foreign Affairs. When I went to the Department of Foreign Affairs, all they gave me, which was horrific and horrendous and something I'm cr incredibly upset about, they just gave me a list of lawyers in Egypt. Like, they really, really failed my children, so they did. Like, there was no welfare checks conducted. To date, there's no welfare checks conducted on my children. They never even reached out to my ex-partner to return the children's passports. So in essence, from the very beginning, they were protecting him more than my two kids and I. They should have reported, even though I know that this is not the role of the embassy, but they definitely should have reported this immediately to the Ministry of Justice in Egypt. Obviously, I know they couldn't have gone to the police, but they should have reported it to the Ministry of Justice.
Is what he did, is it regarded as a crime over there? He's
Well,
regarded
it
in
is
the
a
right, is he?
crime. It is a crime. Parental abduction is a crime in Egypt. However, the penalties hasn't changed from the early 1960s. So the penalty is only a month in prison or a 25 € fine. However, thankfully, and out of my own fortitude and resilience, I have fought very, very hard to get a European arrest warrant for my ex on child abduction charges, and possibly in the future there will be local extortion charges as well. So by me doing this, and it has taken 2 years, 2 years of relentless diligence in getting this done.
Is there a facility for you to go? I'm not saying that you can do this, but did they say it was possible or feasible that you go to live in Egypt and effectively sue him? Is that what they were suggesting?
So what the Department of Foreign Affairs had wanted me to do, and obviously it was incorrect. The advice that they gave me was incorrect, and it was contrary to what I had been told even by the Department of Justice in Egypt. So what I was told to do was to begin divorce proceedings in Egypt. So obviously, automatically, it's a civil case. It's just a husband and wife that have had a big row on holidays, and it's a love tug of war case. No criminality involved. Hush, hush, let's get this woman away. We don't want to hear any more. So, something inside me instinctively knew that this was incorrect. I think it's a maternal blessing when you just know that something that you're being told is incorrect. So, the mediator, Dr. Micheál O'Hurley, and I met with Mr. Micheál Martin before Christmas. And during that meeting, I was advised to go to Cairo to commence divorce proceedings. And in that way, I would be able to get, it was presumed that I would get full custody of my children. But the problem that I always had, Michael, was the leaving part. Okay. So what happens to an awful lot of foreign mothers that are trapped in the situations in non-Hague countries, signatory countries, is they get the full custody, but they're not able to leave. And I did not want to be trapped in this situation because obviously I've built up a huge network of parents that unfortunately have found themselves in this situation. So I was adamant that when I left Cairo on the 17th of March at 2 a.m., that the next time I was to go to Cairo, that my kids, and I'm still adamant about this, my kids will be leaving with me.
Is do you...
So, sorry to,
No, go on.
so what they had suggested was I would get custody of my children, and that from there, I would be able to start visiting my children, and that it would take a number of years in order to get a return order. So when I asked for evidence of successful cases, they could only give me two, a British woman and a woman from Cyprus. And when I asked the timeline, I was told that it would be a number of years. How can Micheál Martin, the Minister for Foreign Affairs, say that this is in the best interests of two young Irish children, as in Zane, as I said, was 3 years old when this happened, and Karim was 16 months old. How can he sit and have the audacity to say that this is in the best interests of two children and for their mother? It's unbelievable. It's actually unbelievable. And what's more horrific is that months after when this occurred, obviously I had started to reach out to all of the TDs, politicians in the country. The then Minister for Foreign Affairs, Simon Coveney, had actually been in a meeting with the Egyptian ambassador to draw up an international agreement on the return of an Egyptian mummy as part of a kinship project. So if the two sides can meet and draw up agreements on the return of art, surely they can sit and draw up an agreement on child custody issues.
How do you think, what is your roadmap for getting the kids back to Ireland now?
So thankfully, as it said, the DPP has directed that the European arrest warrants be issued. That's going to happen within days. But even the timeline with that, Michael, only as I said to you, only I have fought tooth and nail. I mean, tooth and nail for this. This would never have happened. I actually do think that, and from my own research, that this is almost like as in this is almost precedent, like as in there's never been, the state has never really issued criminal proceedings against a child, like against a parent that has committed this crime. So that in itself has given me huge hope that even once this is once the High Court judge, I guess, and issues this warrant, there is really no excuse for the state not to intervene more. There really is no excuse, as in I have utilized every diplomatic card that I have, as in I have a civil case, I have a High Court order for my kids' immediate return to Ireland. I have there's criminal proceedings now, domestic and European arrest warrants. As I said, I've met with both Mr. Micheál Martin, the Minister for Foreign Affairs. I met with Miss Helen McEntee, the Minister for Justice. I've brought my case. My case has been discussed in the Dáil and in the Seanad on numerous occasions. I've even brought my case to Justice, Foreign Affairs, and the Petition Oireachtas Committee. So I really don't know what more I can do. I'm very lucky that the Egyptian Embassy here in Ireland have kept an open door policy for me to go and, speak with them. And it's something I'm incredibly grateful for, because obviously they know that this is, we're dealing with a criminal here.
When do you think you will get the children back? What time frame do you think it's going to be?
Do you know, so many people have asked me this question, and you can imagine it's 2 years plus now. So, as in, I have had many timelines that have expired, but I do know that I will see my children in 2024. I'm very sure of that.
Unfortunately, you're not the first, and you probably won't be the last person to be in a situation like this. What is your advice to if somebody else is unlucky enough to get into a situation like this? What would your advice to them be?
First of all, know that you're not alone. As in, I felt so alone when this happened to me, because I have had so many knocks. It's been unbelievable. I do hope Not now, and might not be this year, might not be next year, but I do hope to have a foundation to be able to help parents in this situation. Like, as in, I never received any financial or assistance from the state, so I've had to do everything on my own. Like, as in, never give up hope. That's a really important one, because your children need you to keep the hope up in order to be able to be reunited with them. Like, as in, they can't do it. We have to do it for them. And obviously, another thing as well, and this is something that's only kind of really trying, kind of started to sink in as well. Self-care is incredibly important when you're going through something like this. Like, if I don't look after myself and, look after my physical and mental health, I'm no good to when my children are finally reunited with me.
And what's the first thing you're going to do when you see them?
Or just hug them, just get them in my arms and hug them. And, because I'm nearly afraid sometimes thinking about it, because obviously, I've had to nearly learn to live without my children, which is something absolutely horrific. I'm actually scared about what my way I'm going to react, as in, I'm nearly afraid that if I, as I said, I usually keep my emotions hidden, and I do a lot of my grieving behind closed doors. But I think when I see my kids, that will be gone. I can finally, mo like, as in, I can finally cry and finally, I can imagine the relief even will be absolutely unbelievable. I think a lot of the politicians will be relieved as well, because I won't be torturing them anymore as well.
Okay, Mandy, thanks for sharing your story with us. It's a very depressing but very uplifting, because you're so committed to getting your children back, and I have no doubt that you will win. So thanks for talking to us, and we wish you all the best in
Thank
this
you,
really
Michael.
important
Thank you,
struggle.
William.